She stood alone in the glittering ballroom, surrounded by swirling silks and sparkling chandeliers, yet she had never felt more invisible. The laughter around her was light as champagne, but none of it was meant for her. When she lifted her glass to her lips, her hand trembled and no one noticed. No one ever noticed. Across the floor, her husband of 2 years, Lucian Ashworth, the Duke of Ashworth, was dancing with Lady Clarissa Pemberton. His hand rested at the small of the other woman's back with an easy familiarity that made Alara's chest tighten until breathing hurt. His dark head was bent slightly, listening to something Lady Clarissa said, and then he smiled, a quiet, private smile that Alara had never once been given. She lowered her gaze. The champagne tasted like ash. She knew what the other guests whispered behind their fans. Gold digger, social climber, the baron's daughter who trapped a grieving widower into marriage. They did not know the truth, they could never know, but their scorn still found its mark. After 2 years of standing in ballrooms just like this one, smiling until her face ached, receiving nothing but cold politeness from the man she had married, Alara had learned to expect pain. But it did not make the ache any softer. The waltz ended. Lucian escorted Lady Clarissa back to her chaperone, then scanned the room. His eyes passed over Alara as if she were a pillar or a piece of furniture, something unremarkable and easily ignored. Then he turned away to speak with an earl. Alara set down her glass. Her heart felt made of lead. She had tried so hard. For 2 years she had tried. She had written him letters he never answered. She had dressed in the colors he once mentioned liking. She had learned his estate's accounts to ease his burdens. She had loved his daughter Lily as if the child were her own, and still he looked through her. She had married him to protect a secret so devastating it would shatter his world, and he hated her for it. The night of their wedding had destroyed something inside her. She remembered standing in her bridal gown, trembling with hope, and the way he had entered her chambers not as a bridegroom but as a man facing execution. His face had been carved from stone, his voice flat and final. "You have what you wanted, madam," he had said. "My title, my name, my home, but you will never have my affection. I married you to avoid scandal, nothing more. Do not expect warmth from me. I have none left to give." Then he had walked out, and she had wept until dawn. That memory lived inside her like a splinter. Even now, standing among the glittering ton, she could feel it shift and ache. The evening wore on. Alara moved through the crowd, exchanging meaningless pleasantries. She did not seek her husband's attention anymore. Something inside her had begun to change these past few weeks, a quiet hardening, a slow withdrawal. She had stopped waiting by the window for his return. She had stopped choosing gowns hoping he would notice. She had begun to imagine a life where his indifference no longer held the power to wound her. And tonight, for the first time, she felt the faint stirring of something like resolve. She was still young. She was still capable of kindness, of intelligence, of strength. If he would never love her, then she would pour that love into the things she could change. The estate, the tenants, Lily herself. The decision settled into her bones like a whispered promise. When the Ashworth carriage arrived to take them home, she climbed in first and sat by the window, not looking at him when he settled across from her. The silence was a familiar companion. The lantern light carved shadows across his handsome face, and for a moment she allowed herself to remember the girl she had been before all this, the girl who had secretly admired Lucian Ashworth from across candle-lit rooms, long before she ever knew the weight of his grief. That girl would have given anything for this moment beside him. Now, she only felt tired. "You danced very little tonight," Lucian said suddenly. Alara blinked, startled. He rarely spoke to her without necessity. "I was not asked often," she replied, keeping her voice even. Something flickered in his expression, but it was gone before she could name it. "I see." That was all. He said nothing more, and she turned back to the window, watching the darkened countryside roll past. When they arrived at Briarwood Hall, the great stone manor that had never once felt like home, Alara did not linger. She excused herself quietly, climbed the stairs to her separate chambers and shut the door. The fire had been lit by a maid. The room was warm, but she felt cold all the way through. She unpinned her hair slowly, letting the dark waves fall. In the mirror, a woman she barely recognized stared back. She had been beautiful once, or so people had said. Now there were shadows beneath her eyes and a careful stillness around her mouth. Tomorrow, she decided, she would begin anew. Not for him, for herself. She would stop chasing a ghost. The days that followed changed everything, though Alara did not realize it then. She rose early each morning and threw herself into the work of the duchy. She visited tenants, learning their names and their troubles. She reorganized the household accounts and found waste that had gone overlooked for years. She arranged for repairs to cottages and ordered new blankets for the orphanage in the village. Her hands were rarely still. And wherever Lily went, Alara was not far behind. The child was 5 years old, with her father's dark curls and her late mother's hazel eyes. She was the one bright light in Alara's world, the one person who had never looked at her with suspicion. Lily had accepted her new mother with the simple trust of a child who needed love, and Alara gave it freely, fiercely, without hesitation. They spent hours together in the gardens, planting flowers. They read stories by the nursery fire. Lily called her Mama Alara, and every time the name fell from the little girl's lips, Alara's heart cracked and healed at once. Lucien watched it all from a distance, at first with disinterest, then with something harder to name. He noticed the changes in the household, the laughter from the nursery, the way the servants spoke of her grace with growing respect. He noticed the way his daughter's face lit up when Alara entered a room. And he noticed, with a strange tightness in his chest, that Alara no longer looked at him with that painful, hopeful longing she had worn for 2 years. Her eyes, when they met his, were calm, polite, distant. She was no longer reaching for him. He told himself this was what he wanted. He had married her out of duty, nothing more. Her presence was meant to be a convenience, not a companion. Yet when he passed her in the corridor and she murmured a quiet good morning, Your Grace, without pausing, he felt an odd, hollow sensation he could not explain. A few weeks later, Lord and Lady Hargrove hosted a dinner party at their country estate, and the Ashworths were obligated to attend. Alara dressed carefully in a gown of deep forest green, her hair swept up with simple elegance. She no longer dressed to please her husband. She dressed because she was beginning to remember her own worth. At the dinner, she was seated far from Lucien, which did not surprise her. What did surprise her was the gentleman placed beside her, a man named Julian Croft, with laughing brown eyes and an easy smile. He was charming and attentive, asking her questions about her interests and listening as though her answers truly mattered. He did not look at her as though she were a scandal or a burden. At first, Alara was guarded. 2 years of coldness had taught her not to trust kindness, but Julian Croft's conversation was light and undemanding, and she found herself relaxing. She laughed once, a genuine sound that seemed to startle her as much as it did anyone else. Across the long table, Lucien's hand tightened around his wine glass. He could not hear their words, but he could see everything, the tilt of her head, the curve of her lips, the way this stranger leaned closer. Something hot and unfamiliar twisted in his gut. He did not like it. He did not like it at all. When the meal ended and the guests moved to the drawing room, Lucien crossed to his wife's side with deliberate steps. Alara, he said, his voice cooler than he intended. It is time we took our leave. She looked up at him, and for a moment he thought he saw a flicker of surprise. But she simply nodded, said a quiet farewell to Mr. Croft, and allowed Lucien to lead her away. In the carriage, the silence was heavier than usual. You seem to enjoy yourself, Lucien said at last, his tone clipped. It was a pleasant evening, she replied, her voice carefully neutral. Mr. Croft appeared very attentive. She turned her head to look at him. Would you prefer I sat in silence all night, Your Grace? The question caught him off guard. Before he could fashion a reply, she turned back to the window and the conversation died. Lucien stared at her profile, at the graceful line of her neck, and felt something dangerously close to fear prick at the edges of his carefully constructed indifference. He did not examine it. He refused to, but it stayed with him long after they returned to Briarwood. The weeks that followed brought more changes. Alara's withdrawal deepened, but it was not coldness. It was a quiet self-possession that seemed to grow stronger every day. She had stopped hopping for his love and had begun building a life that did not require it. She was still kind, still gentle, but there was a new steadiness in her that drew the attention of the household, the tenants, and eventually the neighboring gentry. Invitations arrived addressed to her grace alone. She was asked to join charitable committees, to lend her name to good causes. People who had once whispered behind her back now sought her company, impressed by her grace and competence. Alara accepted these small victories without vanity, but they nourished something deep inside her, something that had been starved for far too long. Lucien saw it all. He saw the way the vicar spoke of her with admiration. He saw the way Mr. Croft continued to appear at every social function, always finding his way to Alara's side with that infuriating smile. He saw the way his daughter now ran to Alara first when she fell and scraped her knee, seeking comfort from soft arms and a gentle voice. And slowly, painfully, the Duke of Ashworth began to realize that he might have made a terrible mistake. One evening he found her in the library, a ledger open before her and a pen in her hand. She looked up when he entered and her expression did not change. There was no hope in her eyes, no expectation, just calm acknowledgement. "Is there something you need, Your Grace?" she asked. The formal title cut him more sharply than any blade. He had insisted on distance, and she had granted it to him so thoroughly that he no longer knew how to bridge the gap. "I wish to speak with you," he said, and was irritated by his own hesitation. "About Lily." "She is well," Alara said. "Her cough has improved and she has learned 3 new letters. She is quite proud." "I know, I hear her speaking of you constantly." He paused. "You are good with her." She inclined her head. "Thank you." That was all. She did not invite him to sit, did not seek to prolong the conversation. She simply waited for him to state his business and leave. The silence stretched, uncomfortable and strange, and Lucien realized with a jolt that he was the one who did not want to go. "Mr. Croft has been calling here often," he heard himself say, and immediately regretted it. A flicker of something, surprise, annoyance, passed through her gaze. "He has come to tea twice at Lily's invitation. She finds him amusing." "Do you find him amusing?" Alara set down her pen slowly. "I am not certain what you are asking, Your Grace." He did not know either. He only knew that the thought of Julian Croft's easy smile and warm attention made him feel as though the ground were shifting beneath his feet. "I am merely observing," he said stiffly, "that his visits have become frequent." "Then I shall ensure they become less so if it displeases you." Her voice was calm, but he heard the faintest edge beneath it. "I would not wish to cause you any further embarrassment." The word struck him like a slap. Embarrassment. Was that what he had made her feel all this time? He opened his mouth to speak, but she had already returned her attention to the ledger, and the conversation was clearly over. He left the library feeling more unsettled than ever. The truth was that Julian Croft was not the harmless gentleman he pretended to be. His real name was Julian Ashby, and once long ago, he had been an artist struggling to make his way in London. He had met Lady Cecily Ashworth, the first wife of the Duke, at an exhibition, and what began as a flirtation had become something far more dangerous. Cecily, restless and unhappy in her gilded cage, had fallen desperately in love with him. They had planned to run away together, abandoning everything, her title, her daughter, her duty. Alara had known Cecily in those days. They had moved in the same circles, and though they were never close friends, Alara had seen the path Cecily was walking. On the night Cecily intended to flee, Alara had gone to her in desperation, hopping to stop her to make her see reason. She had arrived at the secluded garden gate just in time to see Cecily and Julian arguing. Cecily had changed her mind at the last moment. She could not leave her daughter. Julian had grown angry, his voice rising. Cecily had pulled away, stumbled on the stone steps, and fallen. Her neck had snapped before Ilara could even scream. Julian had fled into the darkness, leaving Cecily's body behind. Ilara had knelt in the cold grass, clutching her friend's hand, tears streaming down her face. That was how the servants found them. That was how the scandal began. Ilara's father, Baron Vance, had arrived within hours. He was a cold, calculating man who saw opportunity even in tragedy. He knew that if the truth of Cecily's attempted elopement came out, the Ashworth name would be dragged through the mud, and the Duke's young daughter would grow up tainted by her mother's disgrace. He also knew that his own family's fortunes were failing, so he made a plan. He told Ilara to claim she had been at the garden to meet the Duke himself, that their secret romance had led to the tragic accident. The Duke, stunned by grief and bound by honor, would have no choice but to marry her. Ilara had refused. She had wept, begged, argued. But her father had threatened ruin, not just for her, but for the Duke and for little Lily. He had promised that if she did not comply, he would ensure the true scandal became public. She would be ruined regardless, branded a liar, and the Ashworth family would be destroyed. So she had said the words. She had stood before Lucian Ashworth, her heart breaking, and told the lie that would save his name and destroy her own hope of ever being loved by him. He had looked at her with such contempt, such cold fury, but he had believed her. He had proposed marriage 2 days later, his voice empty of emotion. She had accepted, knowing she would spend the rest of her life paying for a sin that was not hers. And Julian Ashby had vanished, presumed dead or fled to the continent. But now he had returned, using a false name, driven by some twisted obsession. He wanted something, perhaps revenge against the man who had kept Cecily from him, perhaps simply to possess the woman who reminded him of what he had lost. He saw in Ilara the same quiet grace that had once drawn him to Cecily, and his attentions grew more persistent, more unsettling. One afternoon, he cornered her in the rose garden at Briarwood. Lily was napping. The servants were inside. Ilara had been cutting flowers when his shadow fell across the path. "Duchess," Julian said, his smile pleasant but his eyes sharp, "you look lovely today, lonely but lovely." She straightened, her grip tightening on the shears. "Mr. Croft, I was not expecting you. I took the liberty of walking from the village. I hoped we might speak privately." He stepped closer, and she instinctively stepped back. "You know, you remind me of someone I once knew very well, someone who made a terrible mistake and paid for it with her life." Ilara's blood ran cold. "I do not know what you mean." "Oh, I think you do." His voice dropped to a murmur. "I remember that night in the garden quite clearly, Ilara. May I call you Ilara? I remember how you looked kneeling beside her. I remember the lies you told afterward to protect the Duke's precious name. It was very noble of you, very foolish." She could not breathe. "You." "I have kept silent for a long time," Julian continued, "but silence has a price. I find myself in need of companionship, a fresh start, and I think you might be the companion I need. Leave Ashworth, come away with me. If you refuse, I will tell everyone the truth. The Duke will know you deceived him for years. Lily will learn what her mother really was. And you, my dear, will lose everything." Fear clawed at her throat, but she forced her voice steady. "I will not go with you." "Think carefully, I will give you a week." He reached out and caught her wrist, his fingers pressing hard enough to bruise. "Do not test me." The sound of footsteps on gravel made him release her abruptly. Lucian had come around the corner of the hedge and stood frozen, his face a mask of shock and fury. He saw his wife's pale face, the man too close to her, the marks on her wrist. "What is the meaning of this?" Lucian's voice was low and dangerous. Julian stepped back smoothly, his smile returning. "Merely a private conversation, Your Grace. I was just leaving." He bowed and walked away, unhurried, as if he had not a care in the world. Lucien's gaze swung to Alara. "You will explain this." "It was nothing," she said, her heart hammering. "He was importunate. I asked him to leave." "You met him in secret." "I did not. He came uninvited." She lifted her chin, even as her hands trembled. "If you wish to believe otherwise, I cannot stop you." He stared at her for a long moment, his jaw tight. Something unreadable flickered in his eyes, doubt, anger, jealousy, fear. Then he turned on his heel and strode back toward the house without another word. Alara stood alone among the roses, the scent cloying and heavy, and felt the last fragile thread of hope inside her snap. She did not see Lucien for the rest of that day. He took his dinner in his study and did not emerge. The servants whispered. The air in Briarwood grew thick with tension. Alara spent the evening in the nursery, reading to Lily until the child fell asleep curled against her side. She stroked the little girl's hair and let silent tears slide down her cheeks. She knew Julian would not wait a week. He would act sooner, perhaps tomorrow. And when he did, the careful life she had built would crumble. Lucien would despise her more than ever. Lily would grow up knowing her mother's shame. Everything she had sacrificed would be for nothing. But even in that darkness, a small, stubborn flame refused to die. She had done the right thing. She had protected an innocent child from a truth too heavy for her to carry. She had saved Lucien's legacy, even if he would never know it. If her world ended tomorrow, at least she could face it knowing she had not been the villain they all believed. The next morning, disaster arrived in the form of a letter. Lucien sat in his study when his valet delivered the sealed note. It bore no signature, but the handwriting was elegant and unfamiliar. He broke the wax and read. His face grew whiter with every line. The letter claimed to reveal the truth about his late wife's death. It named Cecily's lover, described the planned elopement, and then delivered the final, devastating blow. Alara Vance had been there that night not as an innocent bystander, but as a willing accomplice who helped cover up the affair, and then used the tragedy to trap the Duke into marriage. The writer claimed to have witnessed everything and to have proof, letters in Cecily's hand, a locket with a hidden portrait. Lucien's hands shook. He read the letter three times, his mind reeling. The grief he had locked away for years came crashing back, but now it was tangled with a new, sharper pain. Betrayal. The woman he had married, the woman he had finally begun to see as something more than a scheming fortune hunter, had been part of Cecily's deception from the start. He rose from his desk, the letter crumpled in his fist, and went to find her. Alara was in the morning room, staring out the window at the gray sky. She turned when he entered, and the look on his face made her heart stop. "Tell me," he said, his voice hoarse, "that this is a lie." He thrust the letter toward her. She took it with numb fingers and read. As she did, the color drained from her face. "It is not entirely true," she whispered. "Not entirely," he repeated, a terrible bitterness in his tone. "Then what part is false? Did you or did you not know that my wife planned to leave me? Did you or did you not stand over her body and then lie to me, to everyone, to trap me into this marriage?" "I never trapped you," she said, her voice breaking despite her resolve. "I never wanted." "You never wanted what? My title, my wealth?" He laughed, a cold, hollow sound. "You and your father must have been so pleased. The poor baron's daughter catches a duke. What a triumph." "Stop," the word came out stronger than she felt. "You want the truth, then you will hear all of it." And so she told him, everything. From the moment she learned of Cecily's planned flight, to the desperate race to the garden, to the accident and Julian's escape. She told him of her father's scheme, his threats, the impossible choice she had been given. She told him of the years she had spent carrying a secret that was not hers, enduring his hatred and the world's scorn, all to protect a little girl who deserved to remember her mother without shame. Her voice did not waver. She did not beg or weep. She simply laid the truth at his feet like an offering. When she finished, the silence was absolute. Lucien stood motionless, his face unreadable. The letter had slipped from his hand and lay on the carpet between them. Outside, a bird sang, indifferent. "You expect me to believe this," he said at last, but his voice had lost its edge. It sounded hollow. "I expect nothing from you," Alara replied. "I never have. I only did what I believed was right. If you cannot forgive that, I will leave Briarwood today. You may divorce me. I will not fight it. But I will not apologize for loving Lily enough to give up my own happiness." He flinched at the mention of his daughter's name. She saw it, the crack in his armor. For a long moment he said nothing, just stared at her as though seeing her for the first time. Then he turned and walked out of the room. Alara did not follow. She sank into a chair, drained of every emotion, and waited for the world to fall apart. It did not fall apart, not yet. Lucien shut himself in his study for the rest of the day and night. He did not eat. He did not speak to anyone. He sat in the darkness and remembered. He remembered Cecily, her laughter, her restlessness, the way she had flinched from his touch in the final months. He had blamed himself, thinking he had failed her as a husband. Now he saw that she had simply been in love with someone else. The knowledge was a cold, sharp knife. But sharper still was the image of Alara, her face as she had spoken the truth, pale and steady, the way she had not cried or pleaded, the quiet dignity she had worn like armor. He thought of her with Lily, patient and tender, giving the child a mother's love while he had given her nothing but ice. He thought of the years she had endured, the loneliness, the humiliation. She had done it all for Lily, for him. And he had repaid her with contempt. Shame rose in him like a tide, hot and suffocating. He had been so certain of his righteousness, so convinced he was the wronged party, that he had never once questioned the story he had been told. He had never asked her, not really, what she felt or why she had been in that garden. He had simply judged and condemned. Now the truth was here, ugly and undeniable, and it demanded something of him he was not sure he could give, humility. The next morning, he sent for Julian Croft. The man arrived with a smug expression that faded the moment he saw the Duke's face. "You will leave England," Lucien said without preamble. "Today, if I ever see you again, if you ever so much as write a letter to my wife or my daughter, I will destroy you. I have resources and connections that you cannot imagine. Do you understand?" Julian paled. "You have no proof." "I have the letters Cecily kept. I have the testimony of a servant who saw you fleeing the garden. I have more than enough to see you transported for blackmail, if not worse. Leave, and I will be merciful. Stay, and mercy will be the last thing you find." Julian looked into the Duke's eyes and saw no bluff. He swallowed, nodded once, and left without another word. When he was gone, Lucien went to find his wife. She was in the nursery, as he had known she would be. Lily was playing with a set of wooden animals on the rug, and Alara sat beside her, helping her build a tiny farm. They were laughing softly together, and the sound was so pure, so sweet, that Lucien had to stop in the doorway and steady himself. He had nearly destroyed this. He had nearly thrown away the one person who had loved his daughter without condition, the one person who had sacrificed everything for their family. Alara looked up and saw him. Her laughter faded, replaced by that careful neutrality he had come to dread. She rose slowly. "Your Grace, may I speak with you?" His voice was rough with emotion he could not hide. "Please." She followed him out into the corridor, and they stood facing each other in the dim light. He reached into his coat and withdrew a small bundle of letters tied with a faded ribbon. Cecily's letters. "I found these," he said. "They were hidden in a music box I had not opened since she died. They confirm everything you told me." Alara said nothing. Her eyes were dark and unreadable. "I have sent Croft away. He will not trouble you again." He paused, struggling. "Alara, I do not know how to say what must be said. I have wronged you. In every possible way, I have wronged you. I believed the worst of you without question, and I made your life a prison. I can offer no excuse, only my deepest, most abject apology." Her lips parted slightly, but still she did not speak. "You protected Lily," he continued, his voice cracking. "You protected my name, my honor, at the cost of your own. You have been more of a wife and mother than I ever deserved. And I," he stopped, pressing his eyes shut for a moment. "I have been blind and cruel. I see that now. I see you now." When he opened his eyes, there were tears on his face. He did not wipe them away. "I know I have no right to ask anything of you. You have given enough. But if there is any chance, any small hope, that you might allow me to try to earn your forgiveness, I will spend the rest of my life trying." The silence stretched, fragile as glass. Alara looked at him, and for the first time in 2 years, she truly looked. She saw the regret etched into every line of his face. She saw the grief and the shame and the desperate, trembling hope. And she felt something shift inside her own heart. A tiny bud of something she had thought long dead. "I do not need you to earn my forgiveness," she said softly. "I gave it to you long ago. I had to, or the bitterness would have destroyed me." He let out a shuddering breath. Then can we begin again, not as strangers bound by duty, but as two people who might one day find something more." She hesitated. "I am not the same woman you married. I have changed. I will not be invisible again." "I do not want you invisible," he said fiercely. "I want you seen. I want to know you, Alara. The woman who reads to my daughter and saves my tenants from a cold winter. The woman who smiles at flowers and stands unbroken under a weight that would crush anyone else. That is the woman I want." A single tear slipped down her cheek. She caught it quickly, but he saw. He reached out slowly, giving her every chance to pull away, and took her hand in his. His grip was warm and steady. "I am not asking for your love today," he said. "I am only asking for a chance." She looked down at their joined hands, then back up at him. "A chance," she repeated. "I think I can give you that." It was not a grand declaration. It was not a passionate embrace. It was a quiet, tentative step toward something fragile and new. But it was enough. The weeks that followed were not easy. Trust, once shattered, does not mend overnight. But Lucien was patient in ways he had never been before. He joined Alara in the nursery each evening. He walked with her through the gardens. He asked her opinion on estate matters and actually listened. He learned the names of the tenants she cared about. He stopped hiding behind his title and let her see the man beneath, flawed, grieving, but trying. And Alara, slowly, began to let him in. She told him about the years before their marriage, about her lonely childhood and her dreams of a home filled with warmth. She told him about the night Cecily died, the weight of her friend's body in her arms, the terror and the sorrow. She let him see her tears, and he did not flinch from them. One evening, as autumn painted the trees gold, they stood together on the terrace overlooking the gardens. Lily was asleep upstairs. The stars were just beginning to appear. "I want to tell you something," Lucien said quietly, "something I should have realized long ago." She turned to him, her expression open and curious. "I loved you too late," he said, his voice thick. "I think I began to love you the moment I saw you with Lily, but I was too proud to admit it. I wasted years, precious years." Her breath caught, "Lucien. I know you may not feel the same. I know I have no right, but I need you to know. I love you, Alara, not out of duty or obligation. I love you." The words hung in the cool night air. She stared at him, and he saw the war in her eyes, the fear, the hope, the lingering scars. Then she stepped closer and placed her hand on his chest, over his heart. "I loved you first," she whispered. "Before the lies, before the pain, I loved you when I was just a girl who watched you from across a ballroom, and I never truly stopped, even when it hurt." He pulled her into his arms, gently, as though she were made of something precious. She rested her head against his shoulder, and for the first time in years, she felt safe. It was not a perfect ending. There were still shadows, still memories that would ache on certain days, but there was also this. Two people who had walked through fire and found each other on the other side. The next spring, the Duke and Duchess of Ashworth hosted a ball at Briarwood. The great hall glittered with candlelight and flowers, and the cream of society filled the rooms. But this time, when Alara stood at the top of the stairs, she was not alone. Lucien was beside her, her hand tucked into the crook of his arm. He introduced her to every guest with pride warming his voice. And when the music began, he led her onto the dance floor and held her as though she were the most precious thing in his world. People whispered still, but now the whispers were different. They spoke of a love story, a marriage renewed, a duke who could not take his eyes off his wife. They spoke of the Duchess's grace and the Duke's devotion. And Alara, spinning in her husband's arms, heard none of it. She only saw his face, the tenderness there, the love that had grown from ashes. She smiled, and it was real. Lily watched from the gallery above, clutching her favorite doll, and clapped her small hands with delight. The music swelled, the candles flickered, and in the heart of Briarwood Hall, two hearts that had once been so far apart finally beat as one. If you enjoyed this story, don't forget to give it a like and subscribe to the channel. Also, let us know in the comments which country you're watching from. Your support means a lot to us. Thank you for watching and see you in the next amazing story.